Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 7:33 a.m. and that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is January 20th. It's also Martin Luther King Day in the USA. So the primary stock exchanges in the US are closed, but the futures markets are open. But I thought I would record the audio a little early because I will be out of the office for most of the rest of the day. I thought the big move we had in here today was primarily in India. The Nifty was down 127 points, but it trended down throughout the entire session and it has posted a downside key reversal, and it's a rather large one. Now, one thing that has been a hallmark of the trend we've seen in India over the course of the last 2 years has been the failure of breakouts to hold. The sequence of higher reaction lows has also held, but this loss of momentum is obviously something that we need to pay attention to. It was looking increasingly likely until today that this breakout was going to hold, that it was going to break this sequence of failed upside breaks, and the downward dynamic is not so large as it could have been. Certainly when we go back and look at the size of the downward dynamics in the weekly key reversal we had in 2018, it's not quite as large as that. Certainly not as large as some of the dynamics we had in September of 2018, or indeed this big pullback in May of last year. But it does suggest that there is some supply dominance coming through up here. And when we then think about the banking sector, well, it was also in negative territory, and it is now coming back to test the region of the peak from 2019. So I think what we can conclude here is we've had a warning shot. It's being linked to slowing economic growth potential as forecast by the IMF. At Davos kicking off today, they downgraded global economic growth for 2020 by about 0.1%, but they're pegging Indian growth at about 4.3%. That's well shy of the over 6% that it was achieving not all that long ago. Then when we think about India's government bonds, they're currently yielding about 6.6%. It's been largely range-bound for most of the last few months. This ranging environment is very similar to the range that we've seen emerging on US Treasuries. The clear question here is whether we're going to see a move back above the region of the trend mean. Excuse me, I just need to sneeze. I think when we look at what's going on in India, the big question that hasn't really been answered by the RBI is what are they really going to do about the non-bank lenders? D1 Housing Finance is still trending downwards, and it certainly accelerated in the third quarter of last year, but we still have the sequence of lower rally highs, and it is still trading below 20. There is the potential that it could yet go lower. Yes Bank has been going sideways now for most of the last 4 months, but there is still a downward bias over the course of the last month. It really does need to demonstrate support around the low put in September. But what we're probably going to have to see is a more concerted effort by the RBI to try and support some of these non-bank lenders, and indeed some of the banks themselves, particularly, and Yes Bank being one of those. Whether we're going to see a forced merger, or whether there's going to be some form of troubled assets, bad bank set up, is still open to question. We just don't know. But what it does look like is that this issue is starting to have an impact on GDP growth, which will, I think, create some urgency in both the government and the central bank. But this is, I think, one of the things that now we need to pay more attention to, because it has the potential to have a greater impact on the wider stock market. Then, when we look at what's going on in China, the Chinese stock market was in positive territory. There is an increasing flow of news about the respiratory disease and virus that is spreading in China. I remember being in Asia during the SARS scare back in 2003. I'd been diving in the Andaman Sea in Thailand, and when I got back to Bangkok, there were a considerable number of the tourists I was traveling with were rather scared of touching door handles in case they might catch anything. There was a really great sense of danger with regard to SARS, and yet it blew over quite quickly. And so far, we don't have any evidence of health workers contracting whatever this disease is, and that is quite positive. The fact that the renminbi was a little bit steadier in here today, I think, is probably helping to support the domestic stock market. Then, when we look at what's going on in Europe, I think the DAX index is probably the benchmark here, and it continues to hold the move on to new high ground. But what we're certainly seeing is some increasing signs of activity in other markets. The Finnish market, for example, has been resurgent over the course of the last 4 or 5 weeks. It's now right in the region of its peak from back in 2018. The Russian market is also still on a recovery trajectory. And I think there is a logical argument here that it is being led by some of the resources producers. Norilsk Nickel has extended the breakout put in at the beginning of 2019. It is now accelerating on the upside. In fact, it's at a new all-time high based on the closing value. That is being driven higher by palladium, and the pace of the advance has been nothing short of spectacular over the course of the last month. It is overextended relative to the trend mean, and there is a short-term overbought condition. Each of the ranges has been one above another. As long as it is holding the 2000 level, I think this is still going to be a reasonably consistent trend, but a pullback of nearly $300 from current levels is a 15% drawdown. It would also be the largest pullback in a fairly significant period of time. It wouldn't be quite as large as some of the other ones we've seen along the course of this bull market, but it would certainly start to pressure stops. In an accelerating price environment, we know that available demand is getting sapped up at an accelerating pace. Therefore, the number of potential buyers has to contract accordingly, and therefore, the first sign of weakness is likely to represent a peak of at least near-term, potentially medium-term significance. Certainly, the temptation to buy into an accelerating trend is more like gambling than investing. The report I'm posting today from Howard Marks, talking about exactly that point, the difference between trading, gambling, and expected returns and the risk being taken on, I think is well worth reading. Then, when we look at the soft commodities sector, the cocoa price has bounced rather impressively over the last few sessions, and it's now at a new recovery high. It's continued to hold the upward bias over nearly 3 years now. We are, I think, starting to get some positive action coming through in the soft or in the grains and beans. Soybeans is still right in the region of the upper side of this base formation that's been put in over the course of the last year. The wheat price has also been largely range-bound, but it is now coming up to the upper side of that range, and there is a broad rounding characteristic over the course of the last 5 to 6 years. And corn prices, to round out the sector, have been steadying within their range. Now, the seasonality factor has certainly been present in corn prices, with the occasional spike that's not held, but the ability of the price action to hold above $4 will, I think, be a rather important arbiter of whether it can continue to attract speculative interest. We are at the point in the cycle where we should be anticipating some signs of inflation starting to come through. Back in the early 2000s, there was a rational reason for thinking about inflation. Interest rates had been rising, and commodity prices had been accelerating on the upside. It was an inflation scare, and the inflation didn't last. So I think the best thing to characterize the potential for inflation is that it's the time of the cycle when we can expect an inflation scare. One thing that we do know is that wages in nearly half of all U.S. states went up on the 1st of January. And, for example, in California now, the minimum wage is $13. And the point is that the number of people who are making minimum wage is comparatively small, but the number of people who are making just above minimum wage is comparatively large. And then, of course, you have the people that would have been making $15 before and thinking that they're not minimum wage workers. Well, they're going to want $16 and $17 and $18 now. And that kind of wage demand growth is something that can have a deleterious effect on hiring. And when we then think about continuing claims breaking on the upside, well, I think there is the potential that it is higher wages are starting to deter companies from taking on new employees unless absolutely necessary, which means that people are staying unemployed for longer. The fact that this has now broken its downtrend is rather important. Now the question is whether it is going to pull back down into that range and extend the downtrend overall. Certainly the continued efforts by the Federal Reserve to extend monetary accommodation, the fact that the government is running $1 trillion deficits and that the global monetary and fiscal spigots are being opened internationally, that's really quite supportive of the view that we're back in a reflationary environment internationally. But we do need to pay attention to some of these data points. And then, of course, we have Amazon, which has lost uptrend consistency. It has become much more consistent than at any point over much more inconsistent than any point over the course of the last decade. It absolutely needs to push above the 2000 level in order to really confirm both the company's health and the revitalization of the U.S. consumer market. Then when I think we look at the currencies, the euro has pulled back below its trend mean, and it broke its sequence of higher reaction lows over the course of the last 6 weeks in here today. And that is, I think, one of the factors behind the renewed sense of enthusiasm about nominal prices in Europe. It's unlikely, though, to really stoke investor demand when they don't get the potential for capital or for currency market appreciation. When we look at this currency, it has been able to break the sequence of lower rally highs, but hasn't been able to hold it. Now the big question is whether the 110 area is going to hold. If the euro continues to trend downwards, that is likely to result in even more money flowing towards the US dollar. And the dollar index now is right in the region of the trend mean and the most recent of its lower rally highs. if it sustains a move back above the 200-day moving average, then that is going to reassert the choppy uptrend and the potential for a run back towards the psychological 100 level. Against that background, the gold price has been rather steady around the $1,550 area and was firmer in here today against a background where a significant number of other currencies were weaker against the US dollar. The animating factor behind gold is rather complicated, but also can be construed as very simple. The central banks of the world are rapidly increasing the supply of their currency, and you can't increase the supply of gold quite that quickly, and therefore it is holding its value. There is the additional point that when we think about the risk that is outstanding in the bond markets and the the way that the yield curve has been manipulated is also creating a risk in the bond markets. Last year, the 60-40 model portfolio of equities to bonds had its best year in decades. And that was because the stock market did well and bond markets did well. The big question when we do get an additional period of uncertainty is whether that will remain the case. And will bond yields compress if stock prices also compress? That's a big question. And there are some big investors questioning whether we're not going to see a significant problem evolve in the bond markets because of supply. Well, if bonds don't represent the same kind of safe haven that they had in the past, then potentially gold will. And I think that is one of the reasons why investors are supporting the price. But we also can see from this structure right in front of us that there is still an overbought condition. And the pattern of trading over the course of the last couple of weeks has been really very inert. Therefore, we can't anticipate that the gold price is going to remain as inert as it is today indefinitely. We are going to see a more volatile environment because gold is historically a volatile instrument. And the oil price was supported by Libyan supply getting shut off, but so far it hasn't really been able to hold on to the bounce in here. The fact of the matter is that there's still plenty of oil around, and with global growth forecasts getting shaved, then that does remove a bullish characteristic from the oil price. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.